You're listening to a Hanley Intelligence Conversation.
Thank you, Ryan, for being here and our first guest. Okay, so hello, everybody, and welcome to the first Shared Value Conversations podcast. My name is Tiki Barnard, and I'm the CEO and founder of the Shared Value Africa Initiative. And I feel extremely blessed today to share some time with all of you and to share with you what my DNA is about, because my DNA is about creating shared value. The Shared Value Africa Initiative, as we call ourselves, we dream of the day when every company on the Africa continent will be practicing shared value, because then we will really be able to make a difference and to leave no one behind, as the UN Sustainable Development Goals wants us to do. Firstly, a big shout out and thanks to a group of driven individuals that calls themselves Team Amalgamated. They are all studying at Henley Business School for their postgrad diploma in management practice on their journey to their MBA. And then another big thanks to Henley Business School for making this possible and for supporting the Amalgamated team to break all of those barriers and get this podcast series together. And thank you to the team, from Amalgamated. And I know there's Nalendri, there's Mandla, there's Kutala, there's Lucanio and Avusiswe in the team. So thanks again to all of you. So why the podcast series on shared value? And please allow me to take a step back on what the global story of shared value is about. So as you know, shared value is a business management concept, and it's the brainchild of Professor Michael Porter and Mark Kramer from Harvard Business School. I'm sure all our listeners are familiar with Professor Michael Porter, as he's also the father of the five forces that shape every market and industry. So, I mean, if you're studying at Henley, you know about the five forces. So Michael and Mark defines creating shared value as policies and practices that enhances the competitiveness of a company while simultaneously advancing the economic and social conditions in the communities in which it operates. So creating shared value is not about corporate social investment. It's not about corporate social responsibility. Shared value is about creating economic value, and that's what we call the profit side of it, and simultaneously creating social and environmental value, which is the purpose side. And that's what we call, as shared value practitioners, profit with purpose. So I think now, for me, is the right time to introduce our guest, Ryan, who's the CEO of Discovery Health. And as we know, Discovery Limited provides insurance products and services. So just a little bit about Ryan, but that you might not know. Ryan's been with Discovery for 14 years. And Ryan, I went and Googled you and I saw you have 34,000 followers on LinkedIn. How did you do that? Because I dream of that every single day. How did you do that?
I was talking to my team today and saying, I'm embarrassed how small it is. We need 1 million.
Wow. So I think, I dream of that. Just a little bit more on Discovery before we get into a discussion. We know that Discovery, if you have a look and you go and Google Discovery, that they operate in 28 countries, and they recognize as one of the world most successful insurance companies. I think every time Mark Kramer comes out to Africa for our Africa Shared Value Summit, because he comes out every year, Ryan, he always uses Discovery as the stellar example. So I think my big question to you is today to just kickstart the conversation. What is that shared value magic, that Discovery has that makes it so successful?
Yeah, Tiki, I mean, thanks very much for having me, first of all. It's a great privilege to be here, and congrats to the Amalgamate Group and to Henley for really facilitating and providing the platform for this. It's an important conversation. You know, I think the magic, as you refer to it, is actually that shared value is the way that we do business. It's central and fundamental to our business model. And you spoke in your description about profit with a purpose. A very big part of shared value is to be a purpose-driven organization. And so we have our eyes very clearly on a core purpose of enhancing and protecting the lives of our customers and stakeholders. And every decision we make, every product we design, we test against that core purpose. It's a central narrative in our conversations, not just words hanging on a wall. And the best way to realize that in our industry, financial services, is to make sure that there's true shared value in every product we bring to market. And what does shared value really mean to us? It means that our customers benefit equally and perhaps even more so to our benefit around from every product that we launch. Our customers, society, and our stakeholders at large. And, you know, I think Discovery Health, as you said, is actually the epitome of defining or representing shared value, which is the reason that Harvard Business School, where Michael Porter teaches, they use Discovery as a case study in that shared value class that Michael Porter delivers. And so, you know, we're very proud over the last 30 years of being one of the kind of leaders of shared value thinking around the world. And the success of our shared value model is represented in the fact that there is about 27 million people around the world in about 28 markets who benefit from the shared value model. And its global success and its recognition through Vitality as one of the world's leading wellness programs by the World Economic Forum is really premised on its shared value principles.
So Ryan, I want to ask you. You said that you know 27 million people in 28 markets. So when Discovery move into these new markets, how easy is it then to take your shared value model along with you into those markets? Because obviously within the Discovery world, it's entrenched and it's there. But now you're dealing with somebody in Australia, or you might be dealing with somebody in Europe. How do you then model, or how do you take that into the new market? Is that fairly difficult, or is it part of the entire process?
I guess there's two parts to the answer. The one is that we think the shared value model and the intellectual property around it is highly repeatable and scalable. And so in that respect, Tiki, it's actually quite easy because these are basic societal principles of how our customers benefit alongside us and how society benefits from a dividend from the work that we do alongside us. So that part is easy. I guess the challenging part is that, as you know, globalization is difficult at times. There are big cultural differences. There are legal and regulatory differences. And then we are, through our model, needing to find local partners, since our model is largely a partner-based model in the reward side of the shared value. We're needing to find local partners and localize the product. So that part of it is challenging. But we welcome those challenges because centrally and fundamentally, the intellectual property has relevance in every society and every market.
Yeah, I think for me, the other challenge that we've come across, you know, in our work, because we work across Africa, and is the fact that when you start your journey as a shared value organization, you know, how did the Discovery entrench the shared value thinking, you know, within the organization? Because I guess that's what we sometimes struggle with, because you have a little unit somewhere in an organization that talks shared value, and then you have the silos that we have within organizations, and they don't talk to each other from that perspective. So how did you, and I know it falls within the strategy of the organization, but how did you get the shared value thinking sort of entrenched in, I almost want to say, in everybody at, you know, every single person at Discovery?
Yeah, our challenge is a little bit different to the one you described. So, I mean, I think starting where you are, we find it very easy to ensure that there is a universal understanding of shared value in our organization, because it is fundamentally at the heart of our product and our proposition. And when we recruit people, when we promote people, every part of our employee value proposition and lifecycle is premised and understood to be around shared value. We have a chief culture officer here at Discovery. Her name is Amanda Porter. She's been with Discovery almost since it started. But Amanda runs an induction program for all employees across our group. Whichever division you're joining, whatever you're going to do at Discovery, all levels, by the way, doesn't matter whether you're coming in as a CEO or whether you're coming in as a very junior staff member, everyone sits together and does an induction together for the first couple of weeks at Discovery. And that induction spends days on the shared value model. How does it manifest from a healthcare perspective, from a life insurance perspective, from a short-term insurance, or from a financial well-being perspective in the bank? How does shared value actually manifest? The CEOs, me, I go to those induction sessions and I take the team through understanding shared value. So on day one, in fact, on day naught, when we recruit you, the conversation is about shared value. Our products are centered on it and our purpose. We are purpose-led. Our purpose is focused on it. So we don't struggle with that side of it that you're reporting anecdotally. I can see how in an organization who introduces shared value as an afterthought, whose products and legacy is not shared value, I can see how that is challenging. But we don't face that challenge. The bigger challenge we face, you spoke about Africa, we've just launched a health insurance proposition into Africa. We're running in 5 markets, and we should be running in 12 by the end of the year. And attached to that, of course, we have the Vitality product inside our health insurance offering in Africa. And the part we find difficult, to your question, Tiki, is getting new customers, new markets, to understand and believe that shared value truly works in a healthcare context. You know, the traditional model of just paying healthcare insurance claims when people get sick is how markets tend to think about health insurance. We think about it totally differently. We think it's about keeping you healthy, investing in your health and well-being, sharing value with you through keeping you healthy, and then obviously reducing the number of health insurance claims that you ever need. And the benefit to society of that is immense. A healthier and a more productive society.
Yeah, I think Ryan, you touched on it earlier on as well. I think it's got a lot to do with culture as well. You know, because I guess when you look at the rest of Africa, and I'm thinking about even about the Mtiba product that Safaricom has in Kenya, which is it's like a wallet. It's a top-up thing, because I think culturally, we just used to going to the doctor when we're sick. We don't think about keeping ourselves healthy, because if we keep ourselves healthy, we stay away from the doctor. But that's not, you know, that's not the thinking. So I guess moving into Africa is also part of that, as a whole new educational process, you know, as well, that goes with it.
Our customer proposition is undoubtedly enhanced by the shared value nature of the work we do. You know, buying insurance of any kind is typically a grudge purchase. Mm-hmm. You buy it because you have to, you resent that debit order every month. You know, insurance is typically a grudge purchase. We make buying insurance, firstly, quite fun, but secondly, quite meaningful to your day-to-day life. We provide incentives and rewards that the rewards are really attractive, and the incentives keep you healthy and change your lifestyle. And so we actually change the way customers think about buying insurance and appeal to a different part of the brain, a different sense of the lifestyle and well-being. It's not necessarily then just a grudge purchase. So to your point exactly, Tiki, you know, we feel it makes our product more attractive as well as more meaningful to society.
Yep. I think, Ryan, I have been a Discovery member for, I don't know, I think since Adrian started almost, I want to say. And talking about Adrian, I want to ask you about the importance of leadership. Because I think, you know, when you look at the Africa continent and we look at the challenges that we face, and you look at all of the corruption, and you look at all of the, you know, the governance issues that we have from an Africa perspective, from a South Africa perspective, how important is leadership and choosing the right people, you know, to lead? And I think for me, it's very much part of shared value, because I always, for me, if you're a shared value practitioner from a governance perspective, you know, you would look to ensure that there's never, ever, you know, any corruption. You would choose the right supply chain. You would train your supply chain. And I'll come back to that a little bit later, because I want to ask you how important collaboration is. But I just want to touch on leadership. At the, you know, the importance of leadership and you know, pushing the organization forward. Because I think for me, in the Discovery world and watching Discovery through all of these years of being part of the Global Shared Value Initiative, I think that's possibly one, not one of many, you know what I mean, pluses that has come out of it, because if you look at the leadership. So Ryan, your thoughts on it.
Yeah, look, whether we're talking in a shared value context or any context of business and business success, societal responsibility, my own view, if I may go out on a limb, is to say that there is nothing more important than working for a leader who inspires you, working with colleagues who resonate with and who culturally are aligned, and ensuring really inspirational, powerful leadership to a business and a group of people. I think in the context of that, we can overcome almost any challenge, truly. And I truly believe that. My responsibility as the CEO of Discovery Health is actually to ensure, firstly, that our strategy is robust and directionally correct, but secondly, to ensure that I employ the best people I can possibly find on the planet to lead Discovery Health and to work in Discovery Health. That is my primary responsibility. I can't do the work that my 5,500 people do every day. They're much better at that than me. My responsibility is to ensure that we have the very best people in the most enabling environment to do that, and that we inspire and motivate them and provide them a brilliant strategy to take the company through growth. I'm very fortunate. I consider myself incredibly lucky when I wake up every morning. I work for Adrian. I report to him directly. And I think a more visionary and inspiring human being I've never come across. Not only does he provide outstanding thought leadership, drive, and inspiration to us here at Discovery, but very importantly to us as a Discovery team, he provides incredible societal leadership. He provides an optimistic narrative, which is realistic and which he truly believes to society. He contributes immensely to business leadership in the country and to the business narrative. And on a global scale, he has changed the face of health insurance and of wellness programs through the innovation and discovery-led business opportunities. And for me, that is what I seek. I'm stimulated and challenged every day by a man who is able to have this global and societal impact, who is a force for social good, but at the same time, who lives a meaningful family life and demonstrates compassion and care to his family and to each and every employee. So, I mean, speaking for myself, that's why I'm excited when I wake up every morning.
Yeah, I think, Ryan, that says so much about leadership, because I think if we can be inspired by those that lead us every single day, you know, we would really change everything for that better world that we're all talking about. I want to go to innovation.
And let me take your statement one step further, Tiki, is that if we're not inspired by leadership every day, then we should sit back and think about a change. And that may be a pretty drastic thing to say, but again, speaking personally, I couldn't work in an environment where I was not inspired by those around me. And I would challenge those people listening in to say that's a question you should ask yourselves. You know, are you inspired by leadership, the leaders that work with you and for you, and the leaders for whom you may be working? And if not, make improvements.
Yeah, I think it's so true. And I think in a lot of ways, when all of us on this, you know, might be listening today, is I think that it's happening at the moment from, you know, to a lot of people, because you have to work. You're 100% right. You need to be inspired every single day, because why do you go to work then? So it's really great to hear that you, and that's how I feel about shared value, Ryan. I'm inspired every single day to try and convince somebody that creating shared value is the right way to go. Because I often say to myself, it just makes business sense, doesn't it? Just make business sense. You've got to create, you know, you've got to be profitable, but you also have to look at how you can change people's lives while you're busy making money and while you're operating. And I just, so thank you for sharing that as well. I want to go to innovation, which we all know is very much part of creating shared value. And I think it was in some article that I read that you spoke in, where you said that discovery probably employs the most actuaries from an analysis and from a data perspective. And I want to ask you, is there an innovation process that you follow at Discovery? That's the first part of the question. The second part is obviously data is what is one of the, I think that is what makes Discovery so successful, because of the capabilities of the data analysis that you can do as an organization.
Yes. Is there a defined innovation process? I would start by saying there's a defined innovation cycle, which is deeply demanding of business leaders and innovation teams. And because we keep ourselves true to the cycle, wherein every year we launch new products which must defy gravity and must exceed customers' expectations and surprise and disrupt the market, we force ourselves into a cadence and a commitment around innovation. And I think the cycle is as important as the process itself. Let me give you an example from my own calendar. Myself and a couple of the other CEOs commit every single Friday morning from 8 to 12 to our R&D process. So every week from 8 to 12, at the most senior levels in the business, we're locking ourselves in a room and working with the R&D teams to present their work from the week prior, to present their thoughts and ideas, their research, and their product concepts. And that's all year round. And that culminates in the health business in a launch to market in around September every year of our new products. And over the 30 years of Discovery Health, where we've grown faster than anyone else in the industry, and I think while we're humble about it, we believe we have succeeded in building a very good business in health, in the health administration and managed care industry, it's really worked. I mean, I think that's testament to how that's worked. But the sacrifice and the time commitment is unequivocal. So I think the cycle is as important as the process. We have been around the world and looked at defined innovation processes all over the place. And we've cherry-picked parts of those processes that lend themselves best to our approach. And we've come up with our own unique innovation process. Clearly, we don't stick to it in too much of a regimented fashion. It's more of a guideline towards the process. And that is the magic. That is what creates the magic here at Discovery. It is, as you correctly point out, very data-driven. We sit on an inordinate amount of extremely valuable data, and we use that data to our competitive advantage, without a doubt. So all of our products are driven and determined not only by consumer needs and demands, which we work very hard to understand, but also by what the data is telling us, where the gaps are, what the opportunities and the challenges are. So it is a highly analytical, data-driven process. The R&D team is primarily led by actuaries. 90% of those people are actuaries. And so they come from a very mathematical background, and that leads to a very analytical process. Although I must say, it is a very creative process, and the creative juices in that team flow very readily.
Yeah, I think people tend to think the moment you say actuaries that those are people that only think in numbers. But I do sometimes what you just said now, there is a creative process that comes into thinking about those numbers. So, Ryan, I want to also talk a little bit about collaboration, because I think if one look at the Discovery model, and specifically when we look at the healthcare side and we look at the loyalty programs and everything, I mean, that's one part of the collaboration. I just wanted to ask you how, because when we look at shared value and creating shared value, one of the biggest, you know, almost want to say one of the biggest deliverables of shared value, because we try and do that from a Shared Value Africa initiative, is to create these relationships between different organizations. Because if we don't collaborate, you know, scaling becomes, becomes more difficult. Because I think in the old days, when we go back to the way we used to think, it's like, we can't collaborate, you know, with everybody out there because we need to keep our competitive edge. However, in order to grow, we have to collaborate. And I always, for me, as personally from a Shared Value Africa initiative, I so strongly believe that the power to bring about change, to create a more equal society, is about collaboration. You know, it's how do we bring big institutions together to collaborate for the benefit of all. And I guess in the Discovery world, when I look at all of the, you know, the organizations that you have to collaborate with, I think it's a huge job within itself to try and get that collaboration to run smoothly. And I just wanted to ask you what your thoughts are on collaboration within this shared value world.
Yeah, by definition, as you say, at the center of any successful shared value initiative is a highly collaborative process. In order to share the value, the English word share, you know, there have to be more than one party involved. And so clearly it's highly collaborative. The best example of it for me is in the healthcare system, how we collaborate with healthcare practitioners. You know, if you look around the world, there is a natural tension that exists in every healthcare system between payers, the insurers, the people that are paying the money, and providers, the people that are delivering the care. And in every healthcare system, you have this tension. The providers always feel they're working too much and getting paid too little, and the payers always feel they're paying too much. And, you know, that tension exists. In our world, where we've used shared value to collaborate with healthcare providers and healthcare professionals better, we've come up with incentives to allow us to pay healthcare professionals and providers more than usual in order to enable them to do more wellness and preventative activities. Let me make it quite real for you. Instead of paying a cardiologist to go in and look at the inside of your heart with an angiogram and understand every time you have chest pain, what's going on with those vessels, we pay the cardiologist a global fee, an all-in fee, not to do the procedure, but rather to treat your risks, to manage your risks of cardiac disease, and hopefully keep you healthy and prevent you from developing chest pain or ischemic heart disease that ultimately necessitates an angiograft. So what we see in that kind of environment is we see fewer invasive procedures being done, cardiologists earning more, and patients actually being kept in better health, better preventative care. And that's a real life example from our very own data and experience. It epitomizes for me the answer to your question is, how does shared value enhance collaboration? And I think that case study is a very good example of it.
Thank you for that. I think when you also go back talking about collaboration and going back to COVID, I mean, for me, I think one of the biggest examples actually of COVID was the collaboration that kicked in so quickly. You know, even when I look, I remember the site at Discovery, you know, where we could go, people could go for their vaccinations, you know, and how all of that came together incredibly quickly, you know, from that perspective. But I want to ask you on the loyalty program sort of collaboration. You know, obviously in the loyalty program, there's a different side to that. There's another side to that particular collaboration. How easy is that? Because I guess when you look at a loyalty program, our first thought is always that you've got to get somebody to fulfill the loyalty program. So how do you start that process with new sort of suppliers from a supply chain perspective?
So, Tiki, I'm going to start by saying to you that we've got to be careful of terminology here because Vitality is definitely not a loyalty program.
Okay.
We think of Vitality as a wellness program.
Okay.
And, you know, while our competitors often like to talk about whistles and bells in their loyalty marketing benefits, what they're missing fundamentally in this model is that actually what we're doing is we're changing human behavior. We're incentivizing people through a series of rewards to stay much healthier. So we do not think of Vitality as a loyalty program. We think of it as a very successful wellness program, which through a series of incentives and rewards changes behavior. You must remember that insurance is there to provide compensation when a risk materializes into an incident. Human behavior causes the risks.
Yep.
That's what leads to the risks. If one drives badly, the chances of an accident are high. If one eats badly or lives an unhealthy life, the materialization of a healthcare incident is high. And so human behavior is what needs to be changed. In healthcare, we know of four particular behaviors that can now be attributed to about 60% of deaths worldwide. It's unhealthy eating, lack of exercise, smoking, and alcohol. Those four things are now attributable to about 60% of deaths across the world. If we're able to, through a wellness program, change behavior with those four things, we can change mortality and we can change healthcare outcomes. And so the starting point is to say, thinking through that shared value mechanism, Vitality is most certainly, in this case, you know, a wellness program. You're right along the theme of collaboration that we need to collaborate very closely with rewards partners. And as I said, when you were asking me about globalization, you need to localize the product in a meaningful way that you have appropriate rewards partners that appeal to consumers, that have a national footprint, and that are relevant to the program in every market that we enter. So, you know, we've come up with a very standard approach to how we engage those partners and in what segments we need to engage them. We need gym partners. We need supermarket or grocery partners for a healthy eating benefit. We often need entertainment partners in order to provide attractive rewards. And we always use travel partners because travel is such a desirable reward for any particular human behavior change or wellness behavior. And yes, that poses some challenges to establish those partnerships. They are commercially very complex. They require sophisticated negotiation and deal making and very, very clever product design to maximize the rewards for that group of consumers who are most successful in changing their behavior. So we try and gear the rewards so that the group that changes their behavior the most, you know, benefits to the greatest extent. Just before I finish that answer, just to pivot to where you started, which is to agree with you loudly that COVID-19 and particularly vaccination was a period of brilliant collaboration, the likes of which I've never seen before in the South African healthcare landscape. The solidarity that developed between the public and the private sector, united around this common goal of protecting society from COVID-19, was astounding and heartwarming, and long may it last. And it culminated, as you say, in a national vaccination program which vaccinated everybody at every site, private, public, whichever medical scheme you may have been with, or even if you're uninsured, you could go anywhere to get a vaccine. And I think that is outstanding and is a brilliant example of how collaboration can lead to better healthcare for all. We face certain access and equity of care challenges in our country, and the world does at large. And I think here we led by example, showing how you can break through those barriers to improve access and equitability of care.
And thanks for that, Ryan. And thanks for reminding me that it's a wellness program and you've got rewards partners. So I also want to, you know, sometimes, you know, when you're as successful as Discovery is, you know, you will get into situations where somebody tries to use your IP or to use your wellness program, you know, to their benefit. And I think I don't want to mention the organization that was involved in it, but what do you, how do you handle those risks from that perspective? Because you said that earlier on, is that shared value is a business management concept that's out there. You know, Michael and Mark put it out there. And I think it's very much leadership dependent. If an organization is going to implement it, you know, to their benefit and to their success. So how do you handle the risks of all of these different entities out there trying to, it's almost like duplicate your model or use the Vitality program to bring into their world, so to speak?
You know, I think that's normal in every competitive market. And we do live in a society where we have a free market that functions well. We expect and we welcome that competition, and we absolutely will destroy the competition every time we can. Not through destructive approaches, but to the contrary, through continually being disruptive, through continually innovating and reinventing our product, and, you know, seeking to just break new boundaries and new barriers and enrich our customer proposition. And that annual innovation cycle I spoke about earlier, that's why it is so important and relevant to what we do. So we welcome the competition. We must remain ahead in respect of the benefits, the smarts, and the analytics that we're capable of delivering.
I think that what you just said now is that welcoming the competition, because that drives the innovation that comes up to stay ahead of everybody else. So what I also wanted to say that I'm very happy about is the fact that you in Africa. I mean, for us, I always used to raise, whenever I went to Discovery, used to ask Barry, so when are you coming to Africa, you know, because you're in Africa, in South Africa, but when are you going into the rest of Africa? And I'm really, really, you know, happy about that decision, specifically from our perspective as well, because Discovery for us from a Shared Value Africa initiative, obviously, is the most stellar example that we can try and convince organizations in other countries, you know, to follow from that perspective. So what was what drove the decision to go into the rest of Africa?
So we are a proudly African business. Our heritage is African. We're domiciled here in Africa, and we are very proud as an African business. You know, I guess, Tiki, it seems obvious that when you're looking at commercial opportunities across the globe, one has to always make sure that you allocate capital and time to the opportunity that gives you the best return on investment. And so over the years, you know, we've had careful discussions and considerations of that. Another issue in healthcare, and it's quite nuanced and particular to healthcare, is that the demand side and supply side of healthcare have to be matched. So what does that mean? It means that you can't really go and offer a very good health insurance product, which is on the demand side of healthcare, to consumers if you don't have a good network of facilities, services, and doctors to deliver the care physically on the supply side. And what we've found, sadly, in much of our analysis around many African markets is that the supply side of care has been quite nascent in some markets. You know, there hasn't necessarily been the ability to deliver the care sufficiently at scale in some of these markets. And that has been a constraint in launching in Africa. We're particularly excited to have launched now. We're very committed to this market. We've studied the competitive landscape, and we thought the timing was appropriate. And our product has been welcomed with quite successful sales in the early part of our African experience.
I think when I can't remember when I had the last discussion with somebody at Discovery when you were busy working on it. So I think that the markets, hopefully the market's going to be good to Discovery in Africa, and hopefully you'll go into more than 12 countries. I think you did say, how many countries do you want to be in by the end of the year? 12. So hopefully that will happen. I think we're starting to come to the end of this, Ryan, and I just want to say thank you for sharing your knowledge. Thank you for sharing what Discovery as a really great shared value example are doing from a shared value perspective. And I just want to ask you, you know, and I think you were right in the beginning when you said that sometimes you get a company that wants to, that's already got their strategy in place, and then they start with shared value on the side. And that's far more difficult to implement than in actual fact starting an organization from, you know, where you can actually start it from scratch, which I guess what Adrian did. That's what he did. He started shared value Discovery based on his shared value model. So in closing, though, what inspirational insight or thought can you share with an organization or with organizations out there as how should they or how could they start their shared value journey? You know, because that's what I think that a lot of organizations want to know when they look at somebody like Discovery. You know, how do we start our shared value journey? Is it, do we redo our complete strategy straight away, or do we do it as an initiative? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's a tough question, and Tiki, you know, are probably difficult to do it for all companies in one approach.
Yeah.
I guess I would start with a series of questions, which is to say, you know, do our products and services, which clearly serve to benefit us and our profitability, do they provide equal benefit or more benefit to our stakeholders and to society? And can we measure and quantify the societal dividend that emerges from our products and services and the customer dividend? Because what we do well as companies is run detailed income statements and financial reports and quantify our own dividend routinely. But that would be the starting point for me, is to ask those questions and do the work to quantify these societal and customer dividends. And then once having made that assessment, ask the next set of questions, which is, what could we do in our business model, in our strategy, to balance these benefits between our performance and our profitability, our dividend, if you like to call it that, and that our customers and society are receiving? What can we do more to share value between stakeholders? I think the one thing that I'm absolutely convinced of is that Adrian's approach to shared value was well ahead of its time when it commenced 30 years ago. Because as we sit here today in 2022, I'm convinced that modern consumers will not tolerate companies being hugely profitable but not sharing value back to customers that they feel is commensurate with their loyalty and commitment to a brand. And I think brand loyalty from a modern customer, particularly a younger Generation Z customer, up-and-coming consumers, I think they want to see an equivalence of value between society, between customers, and between companies, and are not prepared to tolerate companies that function without societal relevance. I think part of the trend of ESG that we all read about and hear about in company reporting and in company governance is driven by this consumer demand for companies to be more environmentally and socially accountable and aware, and to ensure that their governance is impeccable so that they are being transparent and relevant to society in their conduct. And I think that is the force behind ESG. And I think, you know, companies should wake up to the importance of shared value in that context.
Thank you for that, because I agree 100%. And I think this is a discussion for another day, because we haven't even touched on measurement and reporting, and with you bringing in ESG, because this morning I was at an event with Prof. Mervyn King that was, you know, talking about ESG as well. So Ryan, I want to say thank you for being our first guest on our first Shared Value Conversations podcast. It's really been great talking to you. And I think the last thing that you said to me led back to the start of it all is, what is our purpose as an organization? Because that's the start of everything. Because if your purpose is defined from an organizational perspective, you know why you're getting up every single day to go to work. So I just want to say thank you very much for sharing all the information. And and we'll definitely, you know, be seeing you in Africa, which is in the rest of Africa, which is really great. So thank you, everybody, for being part and for listening in to the Shared Value Conversations podcast today. It's our first one, and I do hope that you'll be listening in to many more in the future. And thank you very much.
And thanks to you, Tiki, and to the teams again. I'm very privileged to have been featured in the first podcast, and I hope these thoughts stimulate creativity and thinking in the listeners. All the best.
Thank you. Thanks, Ryan.